Blog Talk Radio.
New season, no mercy. This year, NASCAR in Richmond won't be slowing down for anything or anyone. So where will you be on race day? Sitting at home or strapped in for whatever happens next? NASCAR, Richmond, chaos at every corner. Witness the chaos of the Toyota Owners 400 on April 30th. With tickets starting at just $35 and special offers for youth and military, visit RIR.com.
This is power. This is freedom. This is tradition.
It's Dale Earnhardt with a lead.
This is being who you were meant to be, where you were meant to be. This is more than a race. This is Talladega. The biggest party in NASCAR returns May 5th through 7th for the Geico 500. Call 877-GO-TO-DEGA for tickets.
Hey folks, Timothy Peters, driver of the number 17 Red Horse Racing Toyota Tundra. You're listening to The Pit Stop with Tim DeSpain.
Live from Talladega, you're in The Pit Stop with Tim DeSpain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher Radio, and your Apple Podcast.
Live from Dega Nation, I'm Tim Spain. I'm back alongside my good friend, CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com, Mr. Stephen Wilson up in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Stephen, how you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you? It's, you know, we're finally all back together after the last couple of weeks.
That's right. Yeah, you went off on your adventure, and I'll go ahead and tell everybody where I went. I went down to the Big Easy last week. I had a client conference down there with work, and just go ahead and tell you they can have that place. I've been there, done that. I'm back home in Talladega. I seen it, done it, and I'm done.
Yeah, I've never been there myself. I know you sent me a couple of pictures, but we won't get into it, what the guy was begging for. But that's an interesting place. We'll just leave it at that.
There you go, bud. Yeah, if you and AM hadn't been, you need to go. Definitely don't take the kids. But, Stephen, we got a big show tonight. We got the Director of Public Relations from Langley Speedway, Mr. Vaughn Crittenden. And you know how I am with the names. But, and, you know, we got some other news coming out of the sport of NASCAR. But let's go ahead and bring on our official reverend of the show, Mr. Reverend Joe. He's out there on the left side of everything. Let's bring Reverend Joe in the pit stop. Tennis Bain is deep on the woods. Reverend Joe, how you doing tonight, bud? Everything going good out there on the West Coast?
Not too bad. It's good to hear you back, and I think it's not fair that you leave Stephen without all your magic buttons.
Well, Stephen sort of left me the week before last. Stephen went on his deal. I ain't going to say where he went, but he was out and had Mr. Stan Creekmore from StanCreekmore.com. That was a good show, too. And then last week, which I'm going to go ahead and tell it, Stephen was a little under the weather, and I'm glad Stan come on and helped everything out with you and him and Brett Holmes and everything. It was a great show. I actually listened whenever I got back home. I think I listened to it Friday morning.
Well, it was a good show. I was in a bad spot when I called in. I knew I was going to lose signal. So I stepped away after I did an invocation, and then I came back in a little while later to listen to see if, you know, things were under control or if they needed a hand. And Stan was doing a fine job, so I just left it at that.
Well, you know how you know how media people and race car drivers and all that is, are, River, whenever Steven sort of got that second win, he got that adrenaline, he sort of bust out there, even though
exactly.
he was under the weather. Even though he was under the weather.
Yep, exactly. Did a fine job. Well, let's get
Great.
The party started.
Yes, sir.
Lord, we come before you, and we thank you. We thank you for allowing us to live in a country where we have the freedom to speak, talk openly about things, discuss things, and also be able to go racing, which we'd love to do. We thank you for all you do. We ask your protection upon all those racers, fans, and mechanics and all involved with auto racing all over the world. Ask you to keep them safe, keep them protected, and be with them. Be with our soldiers and their families and all those who step out in the uniform to protect us. So protect all of us, and we thank you for that in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen, Reverend Joe. Invocation as always. Let everybody know if they can follow you out on social media and your website.
Well, they can find me on Facebook at Reverend Joe Bubico, and they can follow our website is ontrackwithjesus.org. My email is ontrackwithjesus@AOL.com, and my phone number is 951-232-7630. Love to hear from you folks.
And Reverend Joe, real quick, are you and Miss Betty planning any other activities? Y'all attending any more races, like far as K&E and West Series or anything out there on the West Coast?
Yeah, we're going to do our best to catch as many of those this year as we can. I got caught on in the South when there was one in the North, and in the North when there was one in the South, but we'll get it together yet. And be in the right spot at the right time as far as the K&N series. And my good friends, the Gillilands, are doing so well in that series and just miss seeing them. So it was a crisscross, and we were in the wrong direction at the wrong time. But we'll get to see them this year some more.
Well, you know, that was just the way y'all had that little deal going on, like you said, north-south. But anyway, Reverend, thank you very much. We've been together for a long time now, a little over 3 years, but thank you very much for being our official Reverend. And tell Miss Betty we said hello, my friend.
We'll do that. God bless y'all.
God bless you too, Reverend. Talk at you next week, bud.
All righty.
All right, Stephen, that was Reverend Joe out there. The number to call in is 215-383-3681. We're live from Begging Nation. I'm Tim Spain, alongside SpeedwayDigest.com, Stephen Wilson, up in the Commonwealth of Virginia, just right outside of Richmond, which the Richmond race is coming up not too long, Stephen. But just to talk a little bit about, we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, we were off this past weekend, Easter weekend. NASCAR always takes Easter weekend off, and I give them a big round of applause for that. You know, where we can celebrate it, all that stuff. Stephen, there were some reports, and you know, you and I had talked about it. There was, I'm going to say like what Donald Trump says, and if I'm offending anyone, I'm sorry. It was sort of fake news. There were some fake news going around on social media about Matt Kenseth is having a press conference tomorrow at the, I think it's in Charlotte at the Hall of Fame, if I'm not wrong, Stephen. And there were a lot of fake news going around that Matt was going to retire. But that was fake news. Am I correct?
Yeah, a lot of rumors have just really swirled around about what's going to come out tomorrow with this. And the retirement thing has kind of cropped up with Matt Kenseth time and time again. And I think really what a lot of this comes out to be is when you take a look at what Joe Gibbs Racing as a whole for an organization wide, when Carl Edwards just kind of left abruptly and they put Daniel Suarez in the car, everybody always thought that the next in line to get a seat over at Joe Gibbs Racing would have been Eric Jones, which is on a one-year deal over at Furniture Row Racing. And, you know, he's been with the organization all the way from KBM and the trucks to the Xfinity Series program, and now he's on a one-year deal over there at Furniture Row Racing. So, you know, obviously with that one-year deal already, you know, put together and the contract signed, Eric Jones, you know, wasn't readily available to take that seat vacated by Carl Edwards at the beginning. And at the second token to that is that Daniel Suarez and the easiest way to say this is the kind of the way his contracts are written is that specifically he can never go anywhere other than Joe Gibbs Racing. He has to stay with Joe Gibbs Racing. He cannot go with an affiliate team such as Furniture Row Racing. So that wouldn't have allowed them as Joe Gibbs Racing and Furniture Row Racing to swap him out. So I think, you know, that's kind of where a lot of these rumor mills swirl back around to is that Eric Jones being in that position, well, what happens to him after this year? Because everybody knows that at some point he's going to get one of these rides vacated, these four rides vacated over there. Kyle Busch is much, much too young. Denny Hamlin has taken and signed an extension already at Joe Gibbs Racing. And Matt Kenseth is, at this point, really the odd man out. How much longer he's going to continue to run for Joe Gibbs is, truth be told, who knows. But I think that's where these really rumor mills come back to, is really just a lot of this and what's going on in the last couple of months. But, you know, through multiple sources and what we've learned through other people within the media, at this point, it does not appear that tomorrow's announcement at all is going to be in a retirement. You know, there is some discussion on, you know, what this might be, whether it might be another sponsor coming on board, because Matt has lost various different sponsors over the last couple of years, especially Home Depot that have been on that vehicle, as well as Dollar General has reduced down and almost totally done away with their sponsorship, so they've had to go and look elsewhere. So, you know, there are things like that. Whether this is a driver contract extension, whether there's been some rumor talking about possibly this is their Darlington unveil, which there's some teams already going out there and doing this already. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot going around about this, but, you know, what we've so far learned is, or at least what's out there is, it does not seem that tomorrow's announcement is going to be any type of, driver, you know, retirement from Matt Kenseth.
And, Stephen, if you can you touch on you brought up a great point. Eric Jones signed the contract that he can go no further than Joe Gibbs Racing. The sport has sort of changed over the years. And I'll use Chocolate Myers' big statement, you know, back in the day. And, you know, you and I, we've been around, my wife Suzanne, we've seen a lot of different drivers, and we've seen the sport evolve into a great sport like it is today, like you and I love. But can you talk a little bit about why everything is evolutionizing, or I don't know if that's a word or not, over to these young drivers that are coming up through the, which I was very fortunate enough to, I got to interview Eric Jones about 3 years ago in one of my first interviews here at Talladega Super Speedway with him and Ben Kennedy. He done awesome. But with the time and day now, with the way the sport is going, the way it's leaning, and these drivers and these, the youngin' drivers coming up that want to get to the big time, they're sort of having to sign these contracts with the stipulations in them. Am I correct, Stephen?
Yeah, I mean, really, and I think what you're talking about is Daniel Suarez and his,
right.
You know, where he's bound to Joe Gibbs Racing. You know, that's more not necessarily Joe Gibbs Racing doing this. From what we know about his contract is more along on a personal side of this, and the way that his contract is written from his side and his sponsorship side, that his driving duties will always be in a Joe Gibbs Racing vehicle. So that's, you know, based on his sponsorship and based on his personal agreements, Daniel Suarez will always be in a Joe Gibbs Racing vehicle, and that where he would no longer, you know, he wouldn't be able to go in an affiliate team such as Furniture Wear Racing vehicle. But your point is, yeah, the sport has changed to a degree where a lot of these teams are really, they're putting a lot of money on the line to get drivers very early on. You take a look at the money just particularly in what they put in for somebody like Eric Jones or somebody like that started off at KBM, and the money that Kyle Busch and those guys kind of lean on Joe Gibbs Racing for not only chassis and engineering help but motors and things of that nature from Toyota. But, you know, the money that goes to back these drivers all the way up through their career, I mean, they're, you know, the teams themselves are having to outlay capital to ensure that their drivers that they're bringing up throughout the series are going to be with them for quite some time. And you've even seen Joe Gibbs Racing even starting to go down into the smaller series such as ARCA, et cetera. And this is being now done for a reason, is because they have to develop these drivers and make sure that they stay on a path to get them all the way up. And, you know, it's always been in years prior where teams were reliant on, you know, affiliates such as, you know, you take a look at somebody like Venturini, you take a look at some of the other drivers, some of the other teams in ARCA and et cetera, who would bring drivers, new drivers into the series from NASCAR home tracks and et cetera. And then they would go out there and they would race ARCA for a couple of seasons, or they would go out there and get their ARCA certification at Daytona, and then they would turn around and they would run with, you know, a NASCAR at Daytona and et cetera. But that's not necessarily the case anymore. You know, money has become to a point that it's extremely tight, and they have to really be able to go out there and be on top and guide these drivers all the way through, because the sponsors that are backing them all the way throughout their career, they can't really afford to lose out on it anymore like they did, you know, 10 or 15, 20 years ago, where if a sponsor decided to drop a driver, you know, there was 5 or 10 or 15, whatever number of sponsors out there willing to pick it up. I mean, sponsor dollars at this point in NASCAR are just really not there anymore. And we've seen that as everybody else has. I mean, where, you know, even drivers like Dale Earnhardt Jr. and you know, name anybody else out there who's running two or three primary sponsors to get them through a season, and we've not seen that through pretty much in the entire modern era up until about the last 5-8 years or so.
You're exactly right, Steve. And just to clarify that word that I was searching for a while ago, I was searching for quote unquote driver development. There's a lot of teams doing that this year, or this time and day.
Yeah, I mean there is a lot of you know development going on out there between the teams, and you're starting to see that more and more of them bringing this in house instead of really just being reliant on others. You know, I don't know if it's really cheaper or anything like that, because I guess really we haven't seen that. I mean, there is a lot of capital outlay where teams are having to bring their own, you know, development in for other series, whether it be Xfinity, Trucks, ARCA, K&N, whatever the series may be, instead of being reliant on others out there to do so. I mean, there's a lot of teams out there that have continued to be partners with, larger teams in NASCAR and build and bring develop drivers up. But yeah, you're right. You're starting to see more and more teams go out there and do the same thing. And I think it's going to continue on into the future where you're just going to have a handful of teams developing and bringing drivers all the way up, all the way from K&N, all the way up into the top tier series. And, you know, these are going to be your Joe Gibbs, your RCRs, your Hendricks of the world, your Stuart Haas Racings, et cetera. And I think it's going to be a consortium of these larger teams that are going to do this, whereas the smaller teams are going to have to continue to rely on, other smaller organizations in the K&N or Camper World and Xfinity series to develop drivers for them and bring them up. And, you know, that's something that, you know, has changed greatly in the modern era also that we've not also seen.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Stephen. And let's take a little short break, Stephen, before we got a guest coming up here on the bottom of the hour. We will be right back from Dega Nation. I'm Tim Spain, and alongside of SpeedwayDigest.com's Mr. Stephen Wilson, we will be right back after this short message.
Never. only one way home. I'm a child of a backseat freedom, baptized by rock and roll. Never leave my bow in the garden of Eden. Never grow up, never grow old, no. Another rebel in the great wide open, on the boulevard of broken dreams. And I've never been I needed to know. John Cougar, John Deere, John 316.
Season. No mercy. This year, NASCAR in Richmond won't be slowing down for anything or anyone. So where will you be on race day? Sitting at home or strapped in for whatever happens next? NASCAR. Richmond. Chaos at every corner. Witness the chaos of the Toyota Owners 400 on April 30th, with tickets starting at just $35 and special offers for youth and military. Visit RIR.com.
This is power. This is freedom. This is tradition.
It's Dale Earnhardt with a lead.
This is being who you were meant to be, where you were meant to be. This is more than a race. This is Talladega. The biggest party in NASCAR returns May 5th through 7th for the Geico 500. Call 877-GO-TO-DEGA for tickets.
We're back live from Dega Nation. I'm Tim Spain alongside my good friend, CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com, up there in the Commonwealth of Virginia, just right outside of Richmond, Virginia. Stephen, we got a guest coming on tonight. Director of Public Relations at Director of Communications at Langley Speedway, Mr. Von Crittenden. And Langley Speedway, they've reopened, Stephen. After I don't know what the deal was. It happened, but can you sort of let everybody know what happened before we bring Vaughn on?
Yes, and at the end of the 2015 season, Langley Speedway closed down because there was a disagreement between the leaseholders out there and the owners that have owned Langley Speedway for 20 plus years, almost nearly 30 years. They've owned the property out there. Over the years, there have been various promoters that have ran sanctioned events out there at the track, but at the end of 2015, the current promoters were trying to just purchase the track after leasing it for the last several seasons. But unfortunately, the owner of the facility and the property was not interested in doing so. So Langley Speedway and the promoters and the owner, they cut ties with one another. And in the 2016 season, they closed down. Throughout the 2016 season, throughout last year, the city of Hampton, where it's actually located at, and the owners, along with the former leaseholders that had been out there and promoters, worked on a deal to actually purchase the racetrack, and it was announced earlier this year that Langley Speedway will return back to a NASCAR weekly sanctioned racetrack. And during Speed Weeks 2017, the K&N Series as well as the Unified Modified Tour during Speed Weeks in Daytona was also announced would be returning to Langley Speedway in 2017. So that's just kind of a quick overview of what has happened about in the last year or so.
Great job, Steve. And Langley Speedway is located in Hampton, Virginia. You know, that's where you and I and AM and Suzanne, Steve, when we go to the race there. And it's sort of a small town, but Langley has, it has some real deep, deep roots. There are a lot of, I know Denny Hamlin has won a championship there. There's a lot of, I don't know if Jeff Burton and Ward Burton have raced there. I hadn't really dug off into it, but Langley Speedway has it's got a lot of big roots of history, doesn't it?
Yeah, Langley Speedway has been an operation for many, many years, going all the way back. It even ran the old Busch series all the way up until the 1980s. Many big name stars have ran there, including people like Dale Earnhardt Sr., Benny Parsons, you name it. They all had run at the track, even current. Denny Hamlin is a Grand Stock champion there from Langley Speedway from many years ago in the 90s. So, you know, the roots run extremely deep at Langley Speedway over the years, and what they've, what they've been accomplishing for many, many years. They also ran the diversity program, bringing diversity drivers up there for the combine. And they've done a lot of other things over the years for NASCAR to really just be involved in it and continue growing the sport.
Yeah, you're right, Stephen. And we've been talking about Langley Speedway here for the last few minutes, but let's go ahead and bring on Director of Communications at Langley Speedway, Mr. Vaughn Crittenden, into the pit stop with Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson.
Let's get ready to rumble!
How you guys doing tonight? I'm doing great, but I hope I didn't butcher your last name. You know, I'm from down here in Talladega, so I got this Southern draw. I hope I didn't mess it up. But how you doing?
You're pretty close. It's Crittenden is how you say it.
Crittenden. Okay.
Yep.
Good.
Some people sometimes say it like it's a chainsaw starting. So you did a lot better.
Thanks, Vaughn. Vaughn, we want to thank you for taking time out to come on the show. We're live from Talladega, Alabama, alongside with my good friend and CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com, Mr. Stephen Wilson. But thank you very much. And I'm going to hand you over to Stephen first. I know he has some questions, and I got a few questions. But, again, thank you for coming on, bud.
Not a problem.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to come on here tonight. The first question I have for you is, at the end of the 2015 season, it was announced that Langley Speedway and the promoters out there were going to separate, and the 2016 season wasn't going to occur. This is after 65 years of racing out there. But at the beginning of 2017, it was announced that the previous promoters and everybody at the city of Hampton came together and was able to agree on a purchase of the track that would ensure a long-term future out there for Langley Speedway and racing in the Hampton Roads Tidewater region. Can you just walk through and just talk about what it really means to the Hampton Roads Tidewater region, especially considering that it's the only weekly racing track within an hour and a half of the Tidewater region?
Yeah, you know, when Langley closed in 2015, it obviously left a big hole in the racing community. You know, when you've had a racetrack that has been there as long as Langley Speedway has, like you said, 65 years at the time, you know, it's cemented itself in the region, and, you know, and drivers, generations of drivers had grown up in Hampton having a racetrack to go to every year. And so when you take that away, you know, it really left a void. You know, I know a lot of drivers, you know, especially like late model drivers and other divisions that, you know, are commonly run other tracks. Some of them traveled, you know, some went up to the Dominion when that opened up. Others would go to South Boston. Some people traveling as far away as, Florence Motor Speedway picked up. They started running a Champ Kart series, and that was about the only place the Champ Karts could run. So, you know, it was stressful for a lot of people. You know, teams that normally spent having to drive 10 and 15 minutes to get to the racetrack were not having to spend, you know, 3.5-4 hours to go racing. So, you know, it really hurt. But, you know, everyone kind of knew during that time that, you know, things were – getting done behind the scenes, you know, and things were looking hopeful. I know there were times where things didn't, But, you know, Bill Mullis, Chuck, Paul, you know, they never stopped working to get that track open. And, you know, we were lucky to be able to make that announcement earlier this year that we were going to be open for 2017.
During Speed Weeks of 2017, the announcement came down that the Unified Modified Tour, as well as the K&N Series, would return back to Hampton in the Langley Speedway. This will be the only races in the Unified Modified Tour. That'll be the only race in the Commonwealth for them. And the K&N Series Tour, the only other place that they're going to race at is South Boston. And you guys this will be the second race in the Commonwealth on Labor Day weekend, taking the spot of the Dominion race that ran last year. Talk about what, you know, bringing those two large-scale events in, and especially the fact that over the last year, the city of Hampton really, when you guys were working on this, there was estimates that these two events in previous years were bringing in $1.5 million, possibly even $2 million or more in economic impact to the region.
Yeah, you know, definitely having these two events back at our track is fantastic. You know, since 2010, we had the Southern Modified Tour, and you know, that was always a great event, so we were certainly glad to have the opportunity to bring the Unified one. Very excited about that car count. You know, everyone saw the amount that showed up at Myrtle Beach, and, you know, we like to think, because we're just, you know, about 4 hours closer, you know, maybe we'll pick up in a few more teams. So, we're really excited about that race. And, you know, and to have the K&N race back, too, was fantastic. And just the cooperation from NASCAR for them to hold those dates like they did, while we finished up getting everything together for 2017, really says a lot about how much NASCAR believes in Langley Speedway and how much they value it as a part of their sport and their history. So certainly thankful that, you know, they did that for us. You know, as for having those events there, it means a lot, because our racetrack's motto has always been where legends are born. And obviously, if anyone looks back, and especially the K&N Pro Series over the past, you know, 6-7 years, you know, almost every new driver who's come up has come through there, which means they've come through Langley. So, you know, we try to stress to all our race fans, you know, when they come to the track, that, you know, this is your chance to see the stars of tomorrow come through the sport. And, you know, the city of Hampton has been helping us tremendously. You know, they sponsor our K&N event every year. It's called the Visit Hampton VA 175. They, you know, helped us a lot. They gave us a tax grant to help us with the purchase of the racetrack. And, you know, it's so rare in racing, especially the local level, where you have a city that is so supportive of its local NASCAR home track. You know, so many tracks, it's almost a war they fight trying to stay open against the city. But here, you know, we have them supporting us all the time. And that economic impact, you know, is massive. You know, these race teams come in from all over the place. They need a place to stay. You know, races end late. They check in at hotels. They eat at restaurants. They travel to other destinations. I've known plenty. I know some of the modified drivers sometimes, especially when we first got the tour date, would come in. You know, they'd race on Saturday. They'd bring their families in, and then they'd go visit Virginia Beach, or they'd go visit Williamsburg, go to Busch Gardens, which is a theme park we have near the racetrack. You know, so it was those types of things that really brought an economic impact to the area. And, you know, we always knew it was a big impact on the region having the track, but, you know, the city wasn't really able to fully understand it until suddenly all that revenue was gone. And, you know, quickly you learned how much that track really does mean to the city, and we're certainly glad that they came back on board as quickly as they could.
Langley Speedway is returning back to weekly racing throughout the year, supplementing the two largest scale events that you guys are going to put on. You talked about one thing in the last question here about how much, you know, racetracks really have to fight week in and week out to stay open, and especially when dollar amounts, entertainment dollars, you know, are big as combat, that, you know, families have to distinguish week in and week out about where they spend this money. Talk about what you guys are doing out there at Langley Speedway. And I know, you know, in the first couple of weeks, you know, a lot of people have been very eager and very excited to get back out there at Langley. But going forward, what does Langley Speedway do, especially to continue that growth and continue that momentum going forward?
Well, certainly, you know, the first few things is, you know, keeping the facility up to date. You know, since Bill Mullis got the track back in 2009 when he had the lease, you know, he started making upgrades to the racetrack right away, you know, and it was already at that time pretty up to date for a local racetrack. With its, you know, we got the concrete walls around the track, the modern grandstand, we have skyboxes, 18 of them, you know, which really helped generate revenue for the racetrack. But, you know, things like we repaved the track. We've, you know, started looking, you know, modifying our concession stand, renovating the bathrooms. And, you know, there's a lot more plans in the future beyond this year to keep renovating the facility, you know, to keep it fresh and to keep the amenities up so that race fans do want to continue to come back. Because we know we have a lot of competition, you know, being in a very popular region. So that's something we have to work on. And something else we brought up this year, we did our fan zone. We built a nice space to fans on to perform. And right now, actually just outside of the Canaan date and the modified date, which we will have actually drivers being interviewed, we are having bands come play in our fan zone. And some pretty dang good ones, too. So it's, you know, it's a great atmosphere. All wraps up around, let's just say 5:45, 6, playing at 5, and you hear them jamming across the whole racetrack, you know, and that's bringing fans in earlier, which is great for us. It gives us a chance to really show them that we're more than just, you know, racing cars that night, you know, and we're doing a lot of other events too, starting to do more things outside of racing at the track because, you know, we only race 25 days out of the year when you really think about it. So there's a lot more chances to try to start doing other things. And so that's another thing that we'll be working on.
Brian, I appreciate you taking the time to come on here and talk a little bit about Langley Speedway and what you guys are doing here in 2017. I'm going to hope to make it out there this year at some point if my schedule will allow me. But till then, I'm going to hand you over here to Tim, who I'm sure has got a couple of questions for you. But good luck here in 2017.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Yeah, Vaughn, can you let our listeners know a little bit about, you know, like we got a lot of listeners out on the West Coast and stuff that normally don't make it over to the East Coast as far as Langley Speedway. Langley Speedway opened in 1950. I think I'm correct. It's an asphalt oval.
Yep.
It's a third mile. The turns are six degrees. The straightaways are four. Can you just talk a little bit about the history of Langley Speedway? I know back in 1970, it was the site of the last Grand National race before
yep.
the series was renamed Winston Cup, you know, which, you know, then it went through everything else as far as the Sprint Cup and now the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series. But can you talk a little bit about the history of Langley Speedway?
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting. Langley actually started even before 1950. It was actually a horse racing track, and it was actually 8/10 of a mile. And then in 1950... the promoter there realized, you know, he could make more money racing cars than he could with horses. So he cut the track basically in half to 4/10. And it's still a very flat track that kind of comes from it being a horse track back in the day, with the straightaways being basically flat just enough for rain to run off of them. And the corners, they're let's just say it's a conservative 6 degrees. It certainly feels almost like it's negative sometimes you're driving around it. But yeah, it was the last, it was the site of the last Grand National race for the NASCAR Cup Series, in 1970, before it became Winston Cup. You know, we've had a lot of big drivers race there. Richard Petty, actually his 50th, anniversary of his win at Langley is this year. So that's really cool. And, other drivers, David Pearson won there. And really cool was, we had a very famous promoter. His name was Joe Carver, and I believe his son is actually the promoter, I think, at Fairground Speedway over there in Nashville, if I believe. Don't quote me on that. But he was a big part of the growth of Langley in the 70s. He would do these match races. He would get like a driver like Darrell Waltrip and a few other local guys, and they'd have a three-car race around the track, and it would just pack the facility. And those are some of the cool things, you know, they used to do back in the day. And he did some other different random events, as any promoter tries to do. He tries to find a way to sell the seat just about any way he can. But moving forward, you know, we had a few Busch Series races there in 80s. And then, you know, Langley kind of fell into some and then back into the 90s, it had a resurgence. You had the ASA Series come there. We had the Goodies Dash Series was there in the 90s. Jimmy Johnson raced there in 1999 with, I believe it was one of those two, ASA or Goodies Dash. I can't.
It was with the ASA Series because I. It was with the ASA Series because I.
Rock.
Yeah, I remember that when Jimmy Johnson came and ran there.
Yep. So he ran that race, and it's kind of funny just looking back at that now. You know, seeing like, wow, that's quite a. You know, it's just cool to know that you know he started there too, and you know that series at Langley, and then you know Denny Hamlin won his first NASCAR championship. At Langley Speedway in mini stocks back in 1997, and so he's definitely probably I would call probably the you know the most successful driver that started at Langley to make it all the way up, and then we've had a few other people kind of make it into NASCAR just not on the driver's side. Caitlin Vinci actually started with Fox Sports. She started at Langley with our TV show we used to have back in the day called Langley Speedway Live. And she would go through the pits and interview during the day, and she was the host of that show. And then she went from there to Speed, which I guess now is Fox Sports. You know, and in 2009, our current owner, Bill Mullins, he got involved with the track, and that's when, you know, we really started to kind of jump forward. He brought USAR at the time to the track, and that was the first touring series that had really been to Langley in quite a while. And from there, the Southern Modified Tour came. The K&N Pro Series came with that. And we also started our annual event, our late model event called the Hampton Heat 200, which is now arguably, even with the modified date and the Canyon date, that Hampton Heat is still our biggest race of the year. 10,000 to win. We, you know, we'll get about 35 to 38 cars that will show up for that race. You know, and it's a part of the Triple Crown, which is between the three big late model races, between Martinsville's 300 race and then South Boston's 200 lapper they have on July 1st this year. So between those three, that's what we call the Virginia Triple Crown, got, you know, kind of playing off the Triple Crown in horse racing. And, excuse me. So, you know, that's kind of a brief history of Langley. You know, it's doing great right now. I would, obviously, I'm a little biased, but I like to think that, you know, we're, you know, one of the top short tracks in the country. I mean, not many tracks have a modified tour date and a K&N Pro Series date and have a signature late model race all tied into one facility. So, you know, we're really trying to grow the track and, you know, make it as big as we can.
And Vaughn, just to, you know, just to touch on my last question to you, I forgot to add this in there. My good friend, Bobby Allison, and NASCAR Hall of Fame member, won that final NASCAR Grand National Series race Langley. Yeah, he did. And you bring up Richard Petty. I want to throw in there just like Steve and I, we were talking today. You got Ned Jarrett won it twice. Richard Petty won it twice back in the, you know, when it was a Grand National Series. David Pearson, oh my God, OMG, he won it three times. And then the late, great Bobby Isaac, he also won. I mean, there's just a lot of history there, Vaughn.
There is.
I mean, you know.
Something sometimes people don't normally realize because, you know, I would say, you know, its Cup heyday was a lot earlier than some other tracks in our region, so it sometimes gets forgotten. But yeah, you know, you stand there in victory lane, and you have to remind yourself that the greatest drivers in NASCAR have stood there. And you know, it's quite remarkable. I actually had the chance; I won my race at Langley last weekend, and I'm standing in victory lane. And you got to remind yourself, wow, you know, the best of the best have been here.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. Thank you for bringing that up. How'd that go, Vaughn? How'd the race go?
That was pretty great. You know, it was the first one. It was the first race I had really raced since the track had closed. I raced one at the State Fair of Virginia in rental go-karts. I beat two 13-year-old girls, so I really don't count that one last year. but I had to itch that racing scratch somehow. But, you know, it was really cool because, you know, I've kind of been behind the scenes involved with waiting to get Langley open and then working with the announcement and making the videos for it. And Bill Mullis, the owner, he's actually not everyone knows this, but before he got involved with the track, he was actually my crew chief in racing when I was racing at Langley. So, you know, we've kind of we've been together at Langley now for really going on 14 years. So, you know, it was pretty special to be able to win the first go-kart race because that's where Bill and I both started in racing. And, you know, it was just really cool. And it kind of really just fell in my lap. The guys in front of me kind of just moved up the track on the first lap. And so I led the first one. And I led it all the way through.
There you go. Congratulations, Vaughn. And, Vaughn, just to, you know, sort of touch on the NASCAR home tracks, you know, Stephen and I, we are real big on it. You know, the history of everything. And Langley is a NASCAR home track. Y'all have the NASCAR Wheeling Modified. Like you said earlier, y'all have 25 races. Y'all also host the NASCAR K&M Pro Series East. Can you let our listeners know, I don't want to put you on the spot, can you let everybody know when and where the them events will be happening?
The dates for those events?
Yes, sir.
Okay, yes.
I don't want to put you on the spot.
I'm a PR guy. I got to know my date. So the modified tour date is May 13th. So that's coming up pretty close here. And then the K&M Pro Series will be on September 2nd, Labor Day weekend.
That sounds good, Vaughn. Stephen, do you have any last thoughts for Vaughn?
Just, you know, thank you to everyone who supported us during the off season and who's come out so far, you know. We've had three great weeks of racing. Something that I don't think we've done in a while is we haven't had a threat of rain yet so far this year. I've probably just ruined us for this weekend. But it's been really great to see all the support that's happened over the first 3 weeks and the crowds. You know, we hope to keep it going, you know, because we know racing's struggling, you know, at the top and the bottom. And, you know, we're always trying to find ways to, you know, buck that trend and, you know, get things going in the right direction. Certainly this year it feels like we have.
David, you have any last thoughts for Vaughn?
Yeah, I think it's actually supposed to rain in Bristol this weekend, so I don't know if that rain's going to come this way or not. So,
well, if it's raining Sunday in Bristol, maybe Saturday's clear for us.
Yeah, hopefully.
I'll be in Las Vegas this weekend, so it'll be dry no matter where I am.
Well, I hear you, Vaughn.
So you don't have to worry about it.
I hear you, Vaughn, out there in Dev. Vaughn. We want to thank you, Stephen. I want to thank you for getting in contact with Vaughn there at Langley Speedway. Vaughn, thank you again for coming on. You can come on anytime you want to. Just get in touch with Stephen. But let everybody know where they can follow you at on social media and Langley's page, social media page.
Absolutely.
Whatever. You got
to go. Yep. So any information you want to find out about Langley Speedway will be on langley-speedway.com. That is our website. And then, of course, we're on Facebook. On all social media, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Vimeo, Snapchat, Instagram, and that's all at Langley Speedway. So just give it a call. We're, you know, trying to stay modern with all that social media too.
Exactly. And again, just, you know, Stephen and I want to thank y'all for getting everything going back up. And I would like to come up here and come to a race one time. You know, it's right there at Stephen's home, so maybe Suzanne and I can make it up there. But again, Vaughn, thank you very much for taking time out, and I will hit you up on Twitter. And good luck in the 2017 season and beyond, Vaughn. Thank you again, bud.
Thank you. And I'll say one more thing to you since you're all the way there in Alabama. We do broadcast our races online for free at fanschoice.tv. I know that's a taboo thing for most short tracks, but we do it for free. So if, you know, anyone out there listening, East Coast, West Coast, Texas, I don't know where you're at, you know, you can watch us online every weekend.
You said Fans Choice TV? Boom.
Fanschoice.tv, that's the website.
Fanschoice.tv. Okay, I will definitely put that in my books. And Vaughn, again, thank you very much. And
that's where I was watching for the opening night from Georgia. I was out of town, so I was watching it open the night in Georgia. So yeah,
well, fantastic.
Yeah. All right, Vaughn, I appreciate you taking the time. I'm gonna try and come up to this modified race. So hopefully, I don't know what's going on. Oh, actually, that's Kansas weekend. I'm not gonna be in Kansas, so that's a good thing. So that's Kansas. I can come out there to the modified race. I'll
look for you
then. But I can tell you, I can't come to the K&N race because I'm gonna be in Darlington with Tim. So yeah.
Well, I can't blame you there. Darlington.
Yeah. All right, Ron. Bon. Appreciate it. You have a good night.
You too, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Vaughn. See you, bud. All right, Steven, that was Vaughn there, Public Relations Director at Langley Speedway. He knows his stuff. He's done his history check just like you and I have. I'm at Langley Speedway. I didn't realize it. I'm not going to lie to you, Steven. I did not realize how much of an iconic racetrack Langley Speedway was just right outside of your back door.
Yeah. That's why I kind of started off with the 65 years that it had been around since, when they closed down. It has been around for quite some time. A lot of racing has taken place there. As I said, even the Busch Series or the current Xfinity Series raced there all the way up until the late 80s out there. A lot of drivers have come through that place over the years. It's one of those tracks that you take a look at and you don't make the realization connection into the fact of how much racing has actually taken place there over the years, especially in its history. A fun fact about all this is first time, I ever saw a race was that, the first time I ever saw a race was in Richmond at the old fairgrounds, but the first time I ever saw a local race was at the Langley Speedway out there. And, I actually used to work for Langley way back in the day in the 90s. Anything and everything out there. That was my first job ever, was actually working for Langley Speedway. So, it's kind of funny that, I'm still doing something in racing here 20-plus years later.
Yeah. That's awesome, Stephen. And, you mentioned that, you worked there at Langley back in the day. Like, I keep stealing Chocolate Myers thing. Back in the day, you was at Langley there in the 90s, and I worked here at Talladega Super Speedway in the 80s, which I actually worked at Talladega Super Speedway with the owner of North Wilkesboro Speedway. I mean, and that's sort of that's a big deal, too, with Enix Daily, and I think 3-4 years when I was in high school, I worked for Enoch, and Pete Sutcliffe come up out of Daytona. We worked to races, and sort of iconic, that you have the Twitter page, Save the Speedway, Save North Wilkesboro Speedway.
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of really, kind of weird, kind of neat in the middle there, it's a small world. As I always say, it's kind of a small world out there in that aspect.
Yeah, it is, Stephen. And Stephen, we're going to Bristol Motor Speedway this weekend. We've been off, like I said earlier, for the Easter weekend. You was off, I was off. Now we're back together. We're going back racing. What do you think we need to look for at Bristol this weekend in the Food City 500 and all that? Have you heard anything, Stephen, about they're going to drag the bottom groove or the upper groove with the tires and put that sticky stuff down again?
Yeah, they're putting that VTX stuff back down again. They're gonna, and they've already started in with that tire dragging. I think today or yesterday. So they're doing both there at Bristol to open up two grooves of racing out there. So I think they laid that VTX stuff down about 5 or 6 days ago there on the bottom groove. And the tire dragging started in either yesterday or today, something like that. So, I mean, there's going to be two grooves out there. How long, these drivers are going to want to stay in these two grooves out there. And, especially, at a place like Bristol, it can become chaotic very quickly on that half-mile bull ring out there, high banked, drivers are not going to really, I think one of the biggest thing we have to really look for is, Bristol this year, with these new rules on, what they can replace and the 5-minute repair rules on pit road and things like that. I mean, drivers aren't going to be able to go out there and beat and bang and use a chrome horn. I think that's going to take a little bit away. In my honest opinion, I think this is a bad rule when we come into a place like Bristol. fans have complained for years, obviously that, we don't have two grooves there at Bristol and, we need to get back to that. And you know, we need to get back to the way the old Bristol was. And, you know, Bristol is making everything, doing everything they can to do it. They've been putting that VTX stuff down. Now they're using the Tire Dragon in addition to that. But I just think that this payroll on top of that, you know, at a place like Bristol, in a place like Martinsville and Richmond, I mean, these are, you know, these are short tracks. These are tracks that, you know, we should expect beating and banging to go on, and, you know, there should be nothing wrong with it, and drivers shouldn't be sent to the garage because they have too much damage or can't repair a car in 5 minutes, especially on a track, you know, these small tracks like that.
I definitely agree, Stephen. And, you know, I myself and Suzanne both, we've made, I think, 7 trips to Bristol. We've been to the spring race, the night race. We've seen the bottom groove. We've seen the upper groove. And like you bring up that VTX stuff, you know, which I'd probably call it like a sticky Coca-Cola or something like the a lot of the pit guys use in their pit area, you know, like on a concrete surface, well, asphalt surface also, just to put that down and give them grip that way they're going around doing it. But with the stage racing, Stephen, they're going to be 3 stages. I haven't looked to see what the laps are. And just to add to your point, that 5-minute rule on pit road, I think it's probably not going to come into play, because whatever happens at Bristol is probably going to be in the garage.
Well, I mean, it potentially, but I mean, the thing is that we've seen over the years a lot of cars go back out there with a lot of fenders cut off on them, and how many cars have we seen go out there beating and bang? I mean, take a look at Terry Labonte. I mean, he went out there literally with a trash race car with the whole front end beating in nearly to the firewall onto it and won the race. I mean, could a car do that conceivably today? I mean, we've almost nearly had it happen. It's, you know, I realize times have changed, and I realize, you know, we're in a different era at this time. You know, we're not going to have that, you know, potential again, maybe. But I mean, we've come close. I don't think, you know, so much at a racetrack like Bristol that we need to worry about parts and pieces, you know, a fender falling off. I say if they go and they cut the fender off and run it around there, I mean, we're not worried about aerodynamics at a place like Bristol. I mean, it's a half mile racetrack. I mean, there's nothing to it. The safety factor is null and void based on the greenhouse area and things of that nature. I mean, there's a lot of smart people in NASCAR, and they build these cars and they do a lot of things, safety measures, safety wise, to make sure that these cars are as safe as possible. But, you know, a front fender cut off, or right front fender cut off, a hood missing or something like that, or a front bumper, if they're running decent lap times at a place like Bristol, I don't see anything wrong with it. If you're running decent lap times, I mean, you know, look at what Brad Keselowski just did, you know, a couple weeks ago. I mean, his car was beat up, banged up, and still went out there and won the race. I mean, you know, they put all kinds of stuff into getting that car fixed out there, and there's nothing wrong with going to Bristol or Martinsville or Richmond and cutting a fender off or two and sending them back out there.
And you're right, Stephen. And you were talking about pieces and parts flying off of cars. And Suzanne and I were there the night that it wasn't a piece or a part that flew off a car. It was Tony Stewart's helmet that slammed into Matt Kenseth's front windshield. And we were sitting there. We were sitting up high. We were in, I think it was the Cool Wiki stands. We were sitting up very high, and I seen Tony coming out there. You know, you can see real good there. You know, like you say, it's the last great Coliseum, but it's a half-mile track. You can see everywhere, basically, if you're sitting up high. Suzanne said, "What in the world's he doing?" I said, "He's pissed. He's pissed." I said, "He's got his – and Stephen, I could see it. I zoomed in on my phone where I could watch it, and everybody, all of our listeners seen it on TV. He double-fisted that helmet, and he slammed it right in that windshield, and the crowd went freaking wild. So it's not only parts and pieces that might be flying off the cars. It could be tempers and helmets also, too, bud.
Sure. I mean, you know, we've seen it there. I mean, I was sitting in Martinsville one time. You know, I've seen the same type of thing happen right there. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
I don't know.
I think there just needs to be a modification into this rule, especially at these three tracks, Bristol, Martinsville, and Richmond. Give these drivers more time because of how small these tracks are, you know, to fix their car. Considering, I mean, we've already figured out the fact that, you know, some of these cautions out here, especially the stage breaks out there, are taking upwards of 20 minutes. But, you know, aside from that fact, give these drivers a little bit of extra time. But at the same token, I don't think they need to be inherently as strict on them as they do, particularly at these three tracks. I mean, these are short tracks. We should expect some kind of carnage, some kind of temper flaring, chrome horn using, moving people out the way. And, you know, sometimes you have to cut that bumper off. Sometimes you got to cut that fender out of it to, you know, keep the tire moving. But, I mean, that's still a good race car out there running top five and top 10 times and still able to go out there and compete just as good as somewhere else as somebody else is that, you know, running in 25th with a good car that hasn't cut anything off. So I think there's some, hopefully that they take a look at this, because I think this is three tracks that a modification of that rule needs to come into play. You know, obviously, when they get to your track at Talladega, you know, if they go out there starting cutting fenders and bumpers and, you know, splitters and, you know, whatnots off of it, you know what's going to happen then. I mean, they're going to be three laps down and, you know, can't hardly run a 40th, you know, lap time out there, even in the draft. I mean, that's an obvious case there, but, you know, there's cases where, you know, when we get to these three tracks where I think it's, you know, okay. It's perfectly okay to, you know, go out there and have a car that's beaten, banged up, and a fender or two missing.
I would definitely agree with your statement, Stephen. Like you say, there needs to be a little give and take, you know, with the drivers in the NASCAR, especially at Bristol. Like you say, Bristol, Richmond, and I'm going to throw back in Martinville, you know, which we had a couple of weeks ago. And to touch on what you said here at Talladega, 9 times out of 10, if something happens here, it's going to be catastrophic. I mean, it's going to flip, it's going to roll, it's going to tear the front end off, it's going to tear the ass end off, something, I mean, you know. More than likely, I mean, you know, we come off of Daytona. You know, Daytona was the first race this year there where they implemented all this stuff. So we're going to see exactly this three-stage race here at Talladega, which we're coming up on in a few weeks. But I don't want to take away from Bristol and Richmond. But here at Talladega, it's going to be a lot different, Steve. And I think the teams have really studied and sort of watched how everything goes. And, you know, actually, last year, there was a lot of drivers that dropped to the back. They dropped to the back to sort of stay out of the big one. You've seen it. And then we had that weather event coming in October, you know, and a lot of drivers dropped to the back. Then they were sort of stalling the green flag start. I mean, it was chaos. But I think the stage racing, like you say, it's going to be different here at Daga. And I will agree, at Richmond and Bristol, it's going to be very, very different. We're just going to have to sit back and see. But like I said earlier, I do agree there needs to be a give and take. This 5-minute clock at the short tracks, but versus the speeds at the short track versus the speeds here at Talladega Super Speedway are, you know, a pretty good bit different. So we'll just have to see how everything works out. Maybe NASCAR will get everything worked out, because I'm like you. I don't want to see somebody pull behind a garage and have to go out of the race.
No, I don't think so. I you're right. You know, I mean, I went back and I watched some of the incidents there at Martinsville, and I'm like, you know, they went to the garage, and I'm like, that's a perfectly good race car. Last
mm-hmm.
year, they would have been back out on the track running, you know, top 15 speeds out there. That's a perfectly good race car. That there's, I mean, yeah, sure, it's beaten, banged up, and the fender's knocked in. Sure, yeah, but, I mean, that looks like a race car at Martinsville. I mean, that's
yeah.
a race car at Martinsville is what that is. But had that been taking place at, you know, your track at Talladega, I would have been like, yeah, that car needs to go to the garage, because there's no way that car is going to get out there and run in the draft. And even if it does, it's going to run maybe 40th, you know, three laps down, and would never even be able to keep up with the pack, because the aerodynamics is so messed up on it, it couldn't conceivably do so. I think there is that give and take. I think there is the modification that can be made to this rule, and hopefully, you know, they are looking at this, and hopefully, you know, once we get through these, you know, they'll start looking at, you know, where they can make the modifications at. And I think those are the modifications that first needs to happen is we go to the short track, and, you know, if you need to take some more time to get this done, and you need to cut a few fenders off and take a you know, whatever you need to take off to get back out there, fine, and so be it. That's a good used up race car at Martinsville or Richmond or Bristol. That's not, you know, as you say, a catastrophic event that happens at Daytona or Talladega.
Amen. And Stephen, my final question, or either my final share with you, and me and you will discuss it here in the Pit Stop Radio Roundtable. I've had a lot of people on social media, and I don't have my rule book up now, but actually Suzanne asked me this question too. There's people that have asked me, all right, the way the rule states, if there's an incident on the speedway, you got the 5-minute clock on pit road. I've had people ask me, okay, well, this car went behind pit road, and there was not an incident, say, for instance, Ty Dillon a few weeks ago, or, you know, whenever, when he had that mechanical issue, he could actually go to the garage and come back to the race versus the rule per the NASCAR rule book. There was no incident, so he could go back there and make his mechanical changes, correct? I want you to clear that for all of
correct.
Our listeners, because I've had a lot of questions about that.
Any mechanical issues, mechanical, electrical, etc., anything that doesn't have to do with damage or accident to the car, as long as you're not working on the body of the car itself, as long as the reason for going to the garage is not for being involved in an accident, working on damage to a vehicle, or anything like that, you can go to the garage to work on any mechanical or electrical problem whatsoever. Motor, transmission, rear ends, tires, brakes, batteries, interior of the car, whatever the case may be. Those are all, and those are just a short list. I mean, there's a litany of things. I'm just going with the major things here. You can go to the garage. You can make all the changes, all the swapping, all take as much time as you need. If you need to go, like, you know, Austin Dillon here, what was it, last week, had to go to the garage, and before the even he made one lap, or was it Ty Dillon, whichever one it was, forgive me, you know, immediately went to the garage on the pace laps. If he had to sit in the garage for the entire race and got back out there 5 laps to go, that's completely legal, as long as it's a mechanical or electrical issue that they're either replacing or repairing. However, if you go to the garage for being involved in a wreck, say that you're involved in a wreck on the racetrack, and you go to the garage, you're immediately done for the day. The 5-minute clock isn't necessarily 5 minutes sitting on pit road. The 5-minute clock starts when you hit the line at the beginning of pit road. So when you hit that line and you hit your pit box, so when you hit that line, the 5 minute clock starts. You can make all the repairs that you want to make per the rule book. There's parts and pieces that can and cannot be replaced. There's
right.
certain things you can and can't do to the body, et cetera, and there's all kinds of drawings and things that are in the rule book that tells you what you can and can't do. You can leave your pit box and go back out on the track and come back in and out and in and out and in and out until that 5 minute clock expires. So let's just say, for example, you come in, you hit the line, you use 3 minutes and 30 seconds, you go back out on track and under caution. You ride around under caution and, you know, you go back green. NASCAR will either make the determination under green whether you can hit minimum speed, which is determined based at the beginning of the race or modified at some period in the race based on the slowest car's lap time to the leader based on an average. Then if you meet minimum speed, then you're good for the rest of the race. You can come in and out, and that 5 minute clock no longer, that 5 minute clock goes away. However, if you, in that 3 minutes and 30 seconds that you spent on pit road, they go back under green. NASCAR has determined that you have not met minimum speed, you're dragging something, you're leaking something, there's an issue they don't like with the car, and they say, okay, you need to go back to pit road. You have a minute and a half left on that clock, so the minute and a half starts when you hit that pit line. When you've got a minute and a half, once it expires, you then go to the garage. You're done for the day.
Thank you very much, Stephen. I've been trying to explain it to a lot of people on social media, and I just don't think they understand my southern drawl, or they just don't understand the garage versus the pit road or whatever. But that is a perfect explanation of everything. Thank you very much.
Well, the funny thing is just, you know, it's not so much that. I mean, the people in the media don't even understand it. I mean, there's been at least I know of at least two, maybe even three that I know right now that I've seen national television make the mistake on, you know, oh, such and such is going to the garage, they're done for the day. And it's like, no, they're not. They're replacing a battery. They're replacing an axle. They're replacing this. And they're not done for the day. They still don't even understand it their own self, even though it's in black and white in the rule book that they can go and readily read them their own self. And, I mean, you know, it's kind of frustrating when, you know, the confusion also comes when the people that are supposed to be giving them the information on national television week in and week out don't even understand the rules their own self. And we've seen this happen on more than one occasion, and they've not gone back and corrected themselves and given an explanation of the rules as to why they were wrong and, you know, why they were in the garage and why they came back out. So I think that's where the confusion continues to come, is that the rules are there. People are trying to understand the rules. But however, when, you know, when somebody messes up, whether it's, you know, whether it's on social media or whether it's on national television, and they don't correct themselves and tell them why they were wrong and, you know, give them the explanation to the correction, that's when the confusion continues to fester there, and people just continue to just become more confused at that point. I think that's where a lot of this is coming at. And I've read the rules, and I'm not, you know, there's a lot of smart people in NASCAR. There really are. There are a lot of smarter people than I am, and I can read this all day long and probably only understand 20 or 30% of this whole thing. But I can at least understand and interpret at least enough of this to make an explanation onto why and when somebody goes to the garage versus ending for the day versus, you know, a mechanical issue where they can make, you know, make the changes and go back out and the whole 5-minute rule thing. I mean, that, I think there really needs to be a total explanation. And then when those corrections, when those mistakes are made, either being on social media or whether it be during a race broadcast, I think those corrections need to be made and reinforced so that people don't continue to be confused over and over and just, you know, causes, I think it's causing people to tune out because they've just become confused by the rules in some cases.
I agree, Stephen. That's the same way I am. You know, I'm not the brightest crayon in the box, but when this new rule package come out, I read it. And just like you said, it's been broadcast out there, and like myself, I'm going to bring Suzanne into it too. She said, "Tim, why is it?" I said, "No, that's not right. They did not mention that right on the TV. This is the way it is. This is the way I read it." And then I sort of second guessed myself. I said, "Let me go back and look." And I looked. I said, "I was right." And you know, like I said, I'm not the brightest crayon in the box, but somebody needs to definitely clarify that, like you said, Stephen. They need to go back and correct themselves. That's where a lot of confusion is becoming. If you're a media person like you and I are, if you know, which I'm not going to say nothing about the broadcast bunch, but I mean, if you want to broadcast this, if you want to talk about it, if you want to say why, if you want to say this is that per the NASCAR rule book, you need to know what the hell you're talking about.
Right, and I mean, I make mistakes too, and you know,
yeah, we all do
mistakes on social media, and people will call me out on it, and I'll go back to the original whatever it was, and I'll be like, "Oh yeah, you're right," you know, and I'll copy the tweet on it, and I'll be like, "Okay, you know, here's the correction," you know, and I'll put the correction out there, but I just don't totally just ignore it because, you know, at that point I'm doing a disservice to everybody out there, you know,
exactly,
with trying to get the information out too.
Exactly. And you know, you and I, we're media and we're trying to help the sport just like you said. And I have been called out too. I have messed up. And I went back, "I'm sorry, thank you for correcting me. Here's the correct stuff." But I do agree. Stephen, it's been a great show. I know you're tired. I'm tired. We're coming up on Bristol this weekend. Do you have the schedule brought up? I don't know if I do.
I've got the schedule, yeah.
Okay, go ahead, bud. Let everybody know where they can check everything out at the last great Coliseum this weekend at Bristol Motor Speedway.
Sure, yeah. So Friday at 4:45. Everything is Eastern Standard Time, by the way. That'll make it just easy real quick here. 4:45 Monster Energy NASCAR Series qualifying out there to be immediately filed for the NASCAR Can-Am Pro Series East on Friday night at 6:00 approximately, as soon as Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series is done. Then switching over here to Saturday, 9:35 a.m. NASCAR Xfinity Series qualifying out there for those guys. NASCAR Xfinity Series racing out there, 1:00, 300 laps, 159 miles for them, and to be immediately followed at approximately 4:00, the Zombie Auto 125 NASCAR Can-Am Pro East Series, 125 laps, 66.63 miles for those guys in the NASCAR East Series. Then on Sunday, Food City 500, 500 laps, 266.5 miles around the half-mile bull ring at the Last Great Coliseum, 2:00 Eastern Time, Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series Racing from Bristol Motor Speedway. PRN has your call, Fox has your television, and that'll do us for the weekend before we head to another short track after that.
Let's get ready to rumble, bud. Hey, Stephen, great show tonight. I want to thank you. I want to thank Vaughn from Langley Speedway. And let everybody know where they can follow you at on social media and your website, bud.
You can follow us at Speedway Digest on Twitter, Facebook.com/Speedway Digest on Facebook, and SpeedwayDigest.com.
Big breath there. Stephen, thank you again very much. Tell AM and the boys we said hello, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday night live from Dagan Nation.
Walking down the street, a hand of mine, it don't keep them other guys. And that one eyes are looking at you. But it's alright, and that's okay. Who could blame them anyway? You're so pretty, and you ain't even got a clue. Cause everywhere we go, girl, you're the star of the show.
Season. No mercy. This year, NASCAR in Richmond won't be slowing down for anything or anyone. So where will you be on race day? Sitting at home or strapped in for whatever happens next? NASCAR. Richmond. Chaos at every corner. Witness the chaos of the Toyota Owners 400 on April 30th, with tickets starting at just $35 and special offers for youth and military. Visit RIR.com.
This is power. This is freedom. This is tradition.
It's Dale Earnhardt with a lead.
This is being who you were meant to be, where you were meant to be. This is more than a race. This is Talladega. The biggest party in NASCAR returns May 5th through 7th for the Geico 500. Call 877-GO-TO-DEGA for tickets.